I would definitely put it in the top 10.
It's so good.
A lot more thought has gone into the story.
I think it's awesome.
This is a spy movie disguised as a superhero movie.
There's such clear-cut good and bad.
It's definitely got some horrific elements.
Well, once we go there, you're just going to throw physics out the window.
That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
This is like the Fast Times at Ridgemont High of the fantasy world. Yep. Wow. That was something else. Now, kids, your homework tonight is to go home and watch this on television.
At that point in the script, you're actually rooting for her.
And I am just giggling maniacally through the whole thing.
When slashers came home.
I love that they just throw you in there and say, okay, find your way out. A lot of people don't like horror movies.
It's a coming of age, not a horror movie.
But I still love it because it's a slice of life, and I'm okay with that. Tim really wants to like this movie.
I loved the production design.
I wanted more from this movie.
Your reality is not what you think it is.
Oh my God, am I destroying our podcast?
How long until we get to his estate?
We've been flying over his estate for the past 2 hours.
Caleb, I'm just going to throw this out there so it's said, okay? You're freaked out. You're freaked out to be meeting me, having this conversation in this room at this moment, right? But can we just get past that? The whole employer-employee thing?
It's good to meet you, Nathan.
It's good to meet you too, Caleb. This building isn't a house. It's a research facility. And I want to talk to you about what I'm researching. You want to see something cool? You are dead center of the greatest scientific event in the history of man.
Hello.
Hi.
Do you have a name?
Ava.
Answer me this. How do you feel about her?
Her AI is beyond doubt.
No, nothing analytical. Just, how do you feel?
I feel that she's amazing.
Good.
Do you want to be my friend?
Of course.
Will it be possible?
Why would it not be? Did you know that Nathan brought me here to test you?
Caleb. You're wrong.
Wrong about what?
Nathan, you shouldn't trust anything he says.
Does Ava actually like you, or is she just pretending to like you? Self-awareness, manipulation, sexuality.
Are you attracted to me?
Now, if that isn't true AI, what is?
Caleb, here's something I want to show you.
Can we talk about the lies you've been spinning me?
What lies?
Today, I'm going to test you.
Why me?
Caleb, you have to help me.
Who's the real test? You.
Is it strange to hate something that hates you? What will happen to me if I fail your test?
Hello, hello, hello out there in YouTube and podcast land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, where we talk about horror movies and science fiction films and those key elements that often lift and sometimes just separate them from the average genre fair, sometimes for good, sometimes for bad, but always memorable. You like how I enhanced that, didn't you? Oh, are you joining us for the first time? Well, if you are, you are in for some fun. And if you're not, then welcome back. David and I, as you that are coming back know, have been talking movies since we were youngsters, and a few years back, we decided to do it for the masses. We're big horror and science fiction fans. Me horror, him science fiction. And we decided we would take them all on by the entire century. And we do a few decades at a time. We are unscripted. We tend to ramble. We also jump around. We don't always do the 60s, 70s, 80s chronologically. We may go back to the 20s or to the 2000s. It just depends on what we have on our list. And if you want to see those lists, I'm going to start making some of our past lists from past seasons available. I was thinking about posting those on Facebook and maybe also on the website.
Oh, nice.
So that there's actually the list. And, of course, you have to join our Patreon if you want to get those lists in advance. But that's another story. Mm-hmm. I'm here with my good friend, David Horton. David, how are you doing today?
I am okay, stressed, too much stuff going on, rambling, running around, doing a bunch of stuff. But other than that, I'm in a relatively good mood. So that's great. And I'm excited about today's topic. So that's even better since it's in sci-fi world. But we normally talk about something else. We do a little icebreaker. What have you been doing this week sort of thing? And especially genre related. Mine is pseudo genre related. Again, I've been doing a lot of reading with my commute over an hour and a half every day. It helps me to wind up or wind down to listen to stuff, listen to audiobooks. And again, thanks to you, because you turned me on to those a few years ago, and I started reading, quote, reading again, which is great.
I think that's so crazy. I've been listening to audiobooks for 3 decades now.
Right, and I had not. I'd always said, nah, if I'm not going to pick up the book, it's not worth it, yada, yada. I was doing that Cogley thing from Star Trek. A book! You can feel it and touch it. That's real. Never mind. Anyway.
Yeah, but an iPad, you can enlarge the print and see it.
You can. And with an audiobook, I can just listen as I go and get into it.
Oh my God. If you picked up an old mass market paperback and looked at it, you would be like, you would go crazy. The print is so tiny.
Yeah. But anyway, so I finished the entire works of the guy that I like named John Sanford, who did all the Prey books. And
you read all of his stuff? Good Lord.
I have read every one of his 39 novels that are Prey books, but then I also read his 5 novels that are a sequel series to that based on one of the character's daughters, who's now a U.S. Marshal character in it, and his 7 novels with another character that he introduced about in book 28 or 29. So he's good at these series. He's really great at plotting. I really love his characterizations and the way he does it. And his twists are always strong. And it's not so heady or so big that I can't do it while I'm driving and enjoy it sort of thing, or while I'm cooking or anything else. Anyway, he has a new series that he's doubled up with another author. It's John Sanford and Michelle Cook. I'd never heard of her before, but they have, and I should have known, honestly, because this won't be a glowing review. I love John Sanford, and I did not like this book. It is called Uncaged, and I should have known because it's called Uncaged, The Singular Menace, Book 1. So I should have known, oh, he's already thought of a trilogy, a quintuplet, whatever, series of books. And so maybe I should expect the plotting to be slower than he normally does and better. Because what made the Prey books work is they were a series and characters evolved a little bit in it. But it was like we used to like television. It was episodic stories in these books. And one book doesn't lead to another book, other than the characters are the same, carrying through.
Yeah, Joe Lansdale does that with the Happ and Leonard books.
Right.
Same characters, but just different stories.
Yeah, and he might make a reference in this book to 4 books ago of some person or some place or something. Very Stephen King. Oh, we're back in Salem's Lot or whatever sort of thing. But it's not integral. You have to read them in order. It's this epic sprawling trilogy or whatever, which is what's happening in all the romantasy books and all that other stuff, and probably has been happening for longer than I know, but just that I'm becoming aware of. Anyway, this book was 28 chapters, could have been 5, because that's how slow the plot developed. And it basically ended on a huge cliffhanger to buy book 2. And I was going, it was just, I'm not going to say it was a waste of time, but I was very disappointed in particularly the lack of character development, because it's like he saved it all for the last third of the book, and he saved all the accelerated plot for the last third of the book. And so now we're suddenly on a roll. I'm starting to like these characters. It's cool. Oh, have to come back for book two to see the continuing story. And I thought, I was as mad as I was from the 70s and 80s when movies would end with the cliffhanger and you, Empire Strikes Back. I have to wait 3 years? What are you talking about? What? You know, now I could just go right to the other book, but I don't think I will.
So who is this woman and what's her story? Why is he writing with her?
I honestly didn't do the research on that. I should.
It's not uncommon. Patterson's been doing it too. And I think there's a money thing there. I think they're doing it there. In some cases, it's because the author's dead and they've somehow gotten rights to the name.
Yeah.
But he's not dead. John Sanford's not.
No, he's still going.
He's 82.
Strong. Yeah. And he's, like I said, he was churning out Prey books, at least one a year, if not two.
Oh, my dad read them like crazy. He would talk your head off about them if he was around.
And Michelle Cook is an author of thrillers and dystopian fiction. She's from England.
See, what do they have in common? Dystopian fiction and British? I don't get that at all.
No. And I've also under her Amazon, she's only got one book. So maybe it's somebody that's a new author that he's going to say, hey,
mentor
her on, or maybe something like that.
Something smelly there. I don't know what it is, but I would.
It was a shame because I really like him and I really didn't like this story.
I know from just not my experience, but my father's experience and maybe even my brother's, that he's a good writer and always has been. He was always on the bestseller list.
Very strong.
So what? Yeah, this is weird. This is weird. Now, I think Patterson's in it somehow for money, though, because he does those courses too.
So maybe she wrote the bulk of it and he just kind of tweaked stuff and put his name on it with her. You know what I mean? To get her started or something. I don't know. It's weird because it doesn't feel like a Sanford book. It's a totally different characters, of course, and situation and everything else. So I can understand, it won't have the same pattern as the Prey books, or it won't have the same pattern as the Letty books. But anyway, that's what I did in my spare time. I read listened to a really bad book.
Maybe they're sleeping together.
He's 82.
He is, but I don't see that he's married.
Then I don't know.
So that could be it too.
Possibly.
He's setting her up for when he's not
around. That's it. Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, what did I do in my genre?
What did you do?
It's a little bit more into my genre. Actually, it's a little bit more into your genre now.
Yay!
Think about it. I watched a little movie that had been on my list for a while because I'd been reading good things about it, called Companion.
Okay.
Companion, the reason I avoided it was because it gave me Megan vibes.
Yeah.
And I did not like the movie Megan very much. This one is a pleasant surprise. It is so much better than the Megan movie.
Okay.
In my opinion. It's written and directed by Drew Hancock. However, it was produced by someone I am getting immense respect for, and that is Zach Cregor, who did Weapons.
Oh, okay. I know you love that movie.
Yeah. And Zach is one of those Renaissance types that we've talked about in the past, where he's an actor, he's a writer, he's a director and a producer. He does everything. Mm-hmm. But I'm the one that says he needs to just stick to writing and directing because he's great at it. But he produced this one for some guy named Drew Hancock. The cast is fantastic. Sophie Thatcher plays, I can't remember
the
what
lead
her
character
name was. Anyway, she... Yeah, the main character. And she may be a rising scream queen because I've got here that she was also in Heretic, the movie with Hugh Grant.
Okay.
As well as The Boogeyman. Neither of those I have seen. But she was also in Maxine. And I don't remember her in Maxine. I'm assuming she was one of the starlet friends of Maxine.
I have not seen Maxine yet. Part of the trilogy I haven't seen.
Yeah. And then opposite her in this movie is Jack Quaid, who we know from The Boys.
Love him.
Yeah, he's great. Mm-hmm. A synopsis is Iris, that's her name. Iris is a companion robot who believes she's human, and her boyfriend Josh are on a weekend getaway with friends. Things turn dark when Josh is controlling nature and a plan to steal money using Iris's capabilities goes wrong, leading to murder, chaos, and Iris's violent awakening to her true nature and a quest for freedom. And all of this is going on, critiquing AI, abusive relationships, and control. So you've got all that as far as a motif behind this movie.
You already have keys for today. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. It's one of the reasons why I chose this one, because I watched this in a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
This movie gets 93% on Rotten Tomatoes with 26 reviews, and I'm totally okay with it. It was thoroughly entertaining. The cast is strong, and I didn't really catch any logic gaps on the first go-around at all. So I think you would really like it.
It is on my list. I should have watched it for this one. It would have been a good companion piece. But
companion.
Yes. Okay, segue then. So I read a really bad novel that was about government control and using implants to turn essentially people into drone soldiers sort of thing. And you watched a total sentient, or not sentient, probably sentient, AI, I guess, robot.
Becoming that way, anyway, yeah.
And that kind of ties into today when we are going to do a redux of Ex Machina or Machina, Machina.
I say Machina.
And some people say Machina. I've noticed a lot of the British people say Ex Machina. However your pronunciation is, if you have not seen that movie, go see that movie right now. Stop, pause us, go watch it, come back. You will be happily entertained and surprised, I hope, because I think it's one of, it's a great, great, great film. I remember loving it from the first time I saw it, and I've seen it a few times since then. A brief sort of synopsis. It's from 2014, directed by Alex Garland. He also wrote it, and
another great writer, director.
Really great writer, director. I think we covered him with 28 Days Later. We did that one already.
Oh, yeah. He didn't direct it, but he wrote it. Yeah.
And Sunshine, he wrote that,
yeah. And Danny Boyle directed both of those. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, they have a great relationship. And one of their.
And he did the new one 28 years later as well.
See, I haven't seen it yet. One of their production designers was the production designer for Ex Machina. That works really well. Anyway, basically the plot as simplistic as I can make it, because this is a very dense plot with a lot of things going on and a lot of twists. And this is not a second screener, as people are now starting to use that term, meaning you probably don't want to watch this movie with your iPad or your phone on your lap scrolling stuff. Because things happen and unique expressions are important and all of that. But basically, we are following Caleb Smith. Caleb is a programmer at a big, huge search engine company, not Google, called Blue Book. And he wins a contest to go and spend time, a one-week visit to the very, very intelligent, reclusive, egomaniacal CEO of Blue Book called Nathan Bateman. So he's whisked out to Nathan's hugely remote, isolated estate and meets him. And he's an intriguing character and very interesting. But right after he signs a non-disclosure given to him by Nathan, Nathan suddenly reveals that it's not really a vacation. Nathan has developed an AI. A robot that he thinks has achieved consciousness, but he wants to test it. And he wants Caleb, his star programmer, to give this AI the Turing test. So Caleb goes in and meets Ava. Ava is a synthetic human, I guess you would call it. A very robotic and very robotic in appearance, but also very feminine in appearance, very childlike in appearance, very girlish sort of thing. Slowly through the week, as he's examining and testing Ava, he's also realizing that Nathan is examining and testing him. It's so much so that about halfway through the movie, you start to realize,
wait, I'm not sure who's being tested by what and what's happening. And there's lots of twists and there's lots of changes. And it ends in a pretty startling little climax that you expected, but then went, really? Thing. And that's enough about that. You've obviously seen this before because we've already done it on the show once. But what did you think? Do you remember the first time you saw it?
The first time I saw it was when we watched it for season one.
It was season one,
season
I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Yeah, if not, it was season two. And I enjoyed it just as much as I did then. I actually watched it twice because I got sleepy the first time and then I started it over. Yeah, Alex Garland's a great writer. I think it's beyond just science fiction capabilities. I think it's a cinematic thing.
Oh, yes. Definitely. And I highly recommend if you are a science fiction fan, you should buy this either in a digital format or in Blu-ray and look at all the special features on it because the special features are amazing for this. They have interviews with everybody. They have design script. There's even the entire shooting script is digitally on a special feature of the Blu-ray. So you can read through the script and see what changed, what didn't, how it worked, blah, 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 how imaginative Garland was even in the initial shooting script that they used.
Interesting. And I guess I also like him because he clearly has a foot in the horror world as well with not only 28 Days Later, but I mentioned a movie not too long ago called Annihilation with...
Oh, Annihilation with... What's her name? Yes. I know who you're talking about Natalie Portman.
Natalie Portman, mm-hmm. Exactly. And he also did that movie Civil War, which I have not seen yet, but I noticed it dropped on one of my streaming things the other day. And I was like, ooh, I want to see that.
But did you? So one of the things that I liked about it and about this time examining the special features is his vision in general, coupled with his huge collaboration with cast and crew. Which we talk about sometimes when we talk about behind the scenes. We talk about whether it's an exorcist or a Kubrick situation where the director can be maniacal and manipulative of the cast, or it's a very collaborative, mm-hmm. like a Ty West or one of those who are working
Flanagan.
Flanagan, who works with the cast and mm-hmm. production team and everything. It's very interesting the challenges they had to do with this because even Garland himself, he said, I essentially wrote a play. It's essentially, there's only three characters really in this. There's four really, but has no dialogue. He said, so basically you're watching three people in a very small isolated place talk to each other. How do you keep that?
Yes, one setting.
Yeah. How do you keep that interesting and compelling and everything? To do that, he demanded rehearsal from the company. So he said, I had to have rehearsal with these people and talk through it. And then he shot it in a very fast 6 weeks. So from first shot to last was only 6 weeks, which is pretty tight for a show for this much work. And then they had to spend over a year for CGI, of course. So there's that. But were there elements? I'm sure we'll talk about themes as we go through this, but scenes, we usually mm-hmm. start with scenes that impressed you or you still have ruminating or whatever.
The first scene that comes to mind is the scene where Kyoko stabs him.
So the last 10 minutes is what you think of first.
No, it's just the way he does it because it's not like a violent stabbing at all. She just kind of sticks the knife in him just slowly. And you go, what the fuck?
And he does
too. That's his reaction too. Yeah. And then he gets in the back too, doesn't he?
Yeah. No, he gets in the back first. Yeah. Kyoko does the back.
Okay.
And then Ava turns. Does the front.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. I had it backwards. But yeah, that to me was jarring.
Okay.
I like the scenes, any of the scenes where Donal's character is interviewing Ava. What is his name again?
Caleb,
when he's first interviewing her and it's, are they flirting with each other? And is she leading him on? And then then later you're like, wait a minute, I think she may be leading him on. There's a lot of subtext in this movie.
Yes. And there's a lot of manipulation in this movie, and what is being, who's manipulating who and how, sort of thing. I agree with you. I think the very first meeting with Ava is one of the most impressive that I like, because he, when he first sees her in silhouette far away, and then he sees her going through the, like the aquarium sort of wall before she comes around. And that entire first, he doesn't sit, she sits first. They both, you know, how to, getting to know each other. And you can tell he's just amazed with, this is a rope. Oh my God, this is really good stuff. Plus the fact that she's attractive, sort of thing. So there's that. I like.
And prior to that scene, you have the Oscar Isaac character having him sign, Nathan having Caleb sign a non-disclosure thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good scene, too, because he's, what am I doing? I don't know that I want to sign this.
I like, Oscar Isaac is so, well, this entire cast is great, so let's say that. But Oscar Isaac is so good in this role and being able to play this kind of genius, megalomaniacal guy with all of his faults and everything. I love the first two scenes. We talk on the podcast a lot about how you intro your character is very important. How they are first perceived and how you introduce the character. So Ava has a great introduction. Nathan has a great introduction because it's through Caleb's POV, wandering through the house alone going, hello. And he finally sees this grand genius CEO outside on his deck boxing with a weight bag. And it's a great intro. And Caleb's intro is great too, because it's the first frame. He's sitting at a computer being observed by all these webcams and everything else. And you get this fish in a fishbowl kind of intro of him. But those first two scenes with Nathan, the way he breaks the ice by going, look, hey, let's just stop all this, okay? You're scared. I understand. You're intimidated by me because I'm pretty impressive and this is a great place and blah, blah, blah. But he's just so got it right there. And he's controlling him from like the first freaking line. It's great. Loved it. I thought that was.
I know. I don't want to get into cast just yet, but I'm like, why did they not get Robert Downey Jr. to play this part? Because it is Robert Downey Jr. That's why. It would have been too Tony Stark if they had him. And the, I see why they wouldn't.
To me, Nathan is not a witty guy. Robert Downey Jr., just like we saw in Scanners a few weeks ago, he's always playing a fairly witty character.
Scanners.
Or no, Scanner Darkly.
Scanner Darkly. And his head did not explode.
His head did not explode, no. But, and Nathan, to me, is not witty. Nathan's very primal. He's very much into, I drink, I have sex, I dance, I eat whatever I want, I wear whatever I want. I'm also a genius billionaire who controls everything.
Philanthropist.
Yeah. Yeah. So, those two scenes, I like the scene where the double twist happens where Caleb realizes that Nathan has been watching him even during the blackouts and all the time and has been manipulating him. And he realizes that he was just bait for Ava. It's kind of the thing. You weren't testing her. Yes, you were, but you were testing her with my parameters, which were, I'm setting you up to be her escape valve if she wants to take it. And Caleb just keeps that focus. He's got his back to him and he just kind of is zoned out and everything else. And then Nathan's kind of being all cocky going, so tell me, what was the plan? What was going to happen during the blackout? Blah, blah, blah. And he was going, I was going to change the lock code so that when the blackout happens, instead of everything locking down, everything opens up. He goes, oh, yeah, that would have worked. And he goes, yeah, because I did it this morning and already reprogrammed it and it's already happening. And he looks at him and then he gets up and goes to the monitors, realize Ava's out. I love that moment. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
I like the Caleb twist at the end. She literally leaves him locked.
I know.
There.
I'm like, will he ever get out?
No.
I don't
know. He will die. He will die in that. Nobody's coming to get him. Nobody's coming to save them. There's no security force.
I figure he'll find a way out, but I don't know.
I love the way Garland set it up because he banged against the glass with that stool for a long while and nothing happened. And then it just ends with him sitting there staring at Kyoko's body and Nathan's body in the hallway. Yeah. And we get that final, which again, another good scene, that final.
And she goes and puts the skin on and leaves.
Yeah, and does exactly what she says in the very first scene with him, which is, I would go to an intersection and watch people, because that's where you learn.
And that's how the movie, which is that's a good scene too, just that shot of her in the public.
So many good shots. And so many windows and reflections, literally reflections in this movie. Which is great cinematography.
Well, the whole place is made of glass.
Yeah, it's glass looking everywhere.
Pretty much, yeah.
But like the design element of her, and that's in the Blu-ray too, where the production designer he's the one that came up with the idea, because in the script, it's just literally a blank wall. Think of Silence of the Lambs. It's just a lucite or glass wall that separates two rooms. And you've got Ava on one side and Caleb on the other. And it was the production designer came up with the idea. He goes, no, I think Caleb should be in a little cube. His should be very restrictive. And Ava should be able to walk all the way around him. Ava should have the freedom, even though she's the one that's trapped. But is she? Or is she trapping him? And let's do that subliminally. And that gives us these three walls that we can play with and reflections and all that. It was a really cool idea. And yeah. Any trivia or stuff you learned or thoughts you had?
Let's see what I've got as far as... I don't really have anything as far as background. I knew that you would. I can move on to cast if you want.
Sure.
Okay. This, as we mentioned, Caleb is played by Donal Gleason, mm-hmm. who is... I think he's great, but I'm a huge fan of his father. And his father was, of course, in 28 Days Later with both Alex Garland and Danny Boyle. He was directed and, of course, Alex wrote it. And that's Brendan Gleeson, for you folks out there that don't know that. I think they're Irish. They're an Irish acting family. Mm-hmm. And it is pronounced Donal. I looked that up because it's spelled with an M, and the M is silent.
Donal, yep.
Donal. He's an Irish actor and writer. Apparently, he is best known for his portrayal of Bill Weasley in the Harry Potter film franchise from 2010 to 2011. And we... just covered Harry Potter.
Yeah.
He also did a movie called About Time that I have not seen. And he also was in The Revenant with Leonardo, and I've not seen that either.
Yeah. Good character in that one. That's a brutal movie, but it's really good. He also played General Hux in the new Star Wars trilogy, the sequel trilogy. And he was also in that with Oscar Isaac.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. I always equate the Gleasons with the Skarsgårds. Only one's family Swedish and one is Irish.
Yeah.
But they're like, oh yeah, that's that great European acting family where the father has a bunch of sons and they're all actors.
Yep. Well, and the other one, what's the Thor family? The Australians.
Chris Hemsworth.
The Hemsworth.
Liam, his brother, is definitely an actor. And I can't remember who else is in that one. But I don't think his father, is he?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe not.
They're just brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Donal, I mentioned he's the son of Brendan, but he's also appeared in several films and theater projects with his father. And I'm pretty sure that the Skarsgårds have as well. I know that his father was on Saturday Night Live with him not too long ago, which is funny. Alicia Vikander plays Ava. And I've got in my notes that she was in The Danish Girl, which is a movie I've heard of, but that I haven't seen. And coincidentally, she actually is Swedish, and she is married to Michael Fassbender.
She was in Tomb Raider, too, the new reboot. Tomb Raider. Yep. She played Lara Croft.
Oh. Okay. And then I was going to say, we last saw Michael Fassbender earlier this season in that Alien movie. Covenant, wasn't it?
Yep. Prometheus.
Did we see? Was it Covenant? Which one?
I thought we did Prometheus. Prometheus.
We did Prometheus. I'm sorry. Covenant was the sequel. Yep. Okay. Anyway, enough about Michael Fassbender. We're talking about Alicia Vikander, who is a very talented actress in this movie.
Yeah, amazing.
There was another actress considered for the role, though, of Ava. Do you know who that is? Mm-mm. Felicity Jones.
I could see that.
Okay.
I could have seen a younger Natalie Portman, too, in this role.
I was thinking Emily Blunt, because the girl reminds me of Emily Blunt in this movie.
Yeah, I could see Emily Blunt, too. I think the reason that Garland said he picked Alicia and Sonoya, so the girl that played Kyoko, was because they're both dancers. And he needed somebody who would have really good movement and control of
their
bodies.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah. And Emily's a little too old for it now, I think. But she would have been good as a younger one.
She would have.
When she was younger.
Yep.
Oscar Isaac plays Nathan. You know him most recently from Frankenstein because you have seen it and I have not.
Yes.
But he plays either Victor or Henry. I'm not sure which one they went with.
He plays Victor. Yeah.
Victor, okay. Last I saw him in was probably Moon Knight, the Marvel series that was on.
Yeah.
Yeah, not so great. But he is a part of several Marvel franchises. He's also the villain Apocalypse in X-Men.
Really? I did not know that, and I've watched that movie.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, you haven't? He has a lot of makeup on, it's obvious.
Yeah, he's a big blue giant thing. Wow, I did not know that.
So he's got multiple ties to both Star Wars and Marvel.
Yeah, yeah.
As well. What
else?
And
I think he's we talk about keys and influences, but also just things that remind us of things. He's to me, a very Gary Oldman actor. He's coming, I think he has a good career ahead of him. Yeah.
We mentioned how he's very similar in ways to Robert Downey Jr. In this role, but there was another choice for this before he got it and it fell through. Do you know who that is? And I think it would have been interesting. It was Jake Gyllenhaal. Because you don't picture him being in a villainous type role, but I think that would have been cool to see him in it.
Maybe.
Yeah. But they couldn't reach agreements on numbers, so Oscar was cast to very much their pleasing, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure. I think he did an excellent job.
Yeah.
Other people, and there's not many, Sonoya Mizuno plays Kyoko. She was in Annihilation, which is the movie I mentioned earlier, which is funny. It's a little bit of a Flanaganism. He's bringing people from other movies like Gleason's son and this girl from Annihilation. Mm-hmm. And then I've got Corey Johnson plays Jay. Was he the helicopter pilot? Yep.
The only other variables in it are the helicopter pilot and the one girl that hugs Caleb in the very first scene and says congratulations.
Okay. And then I've got that he was in Morbius, just another Marvel tie-in, but he was not a very big part at all. As far as awards, this movie was nominated for 2 Oscars. Did you know that?
I knew it was nominated for optical effects, right?
Visual effects and screenplay.
Yeah. Okay. Should have been.
It won for visual effects.
I mean, it should have won.
So it actually won an Oscar.
Yeah.
I don't remember this movie being that high profile.
It was not. It wasn't. It was an A24, and it was before A24 really kicked and has risen to what it is now. And it had very limited distribution from what I remember.
What I have in my notes is that it was the lowest grossing Oscar winner for Best Visual Effects since What Dreams May Come in 1998.
Another great movie from visual design standpoint.
And Richard Matheson wrote that.
Yep. Yeah.
It was nominated for 5 BAFTAs, but it won none. However, it did win a British Independent Film Award. As far as Saturns, it was nominated for 6. As we get closer to the Sci-Fi Awards, it's nominated for more. But it won none because The Force Awakens came out that year and was killing it everywhere.
Sure.
It's got Scadsmore across the circuit, but it is not on the 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die list. Of course, this movie may have come out. What year did this come out?
14.
24. Oh, no. Okay. So, the list was still going on then. It's updated through 2020. So, it didn't make the list. And that's all I have really for cast and...
Well, I would
awards.
Put it on there because it's probably in my top 25 of science fiction films.
I think it belongs in there. It definitely belongs in a top sci-fi list for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Because a lot of heady slow burn sci-fi movies tend to bore me. And this movie does not bore me at all.
Good. I think, but then again, it is, that says a lot about the acting and the screenplay and the photography.
And the writing, yeah.
Yeah, but even the name alone, Ex Machina or Machina, means God in the machine, which is what the entire subtext of this movie is. Is this machine sentient? And the questions that it raises are so heady, like you said, but intriguing. And you can think about them after the film. Think about stuff like she goes, do you have somebody testing you on whether you're intelligent or alive or not? And he goes, no. And he goes, she goes, then why do I have to pass a test? I don't understand. And Garland in an interview says, he said some things I wanted to quote and make sure that we talk about, because he said from a thematic approach to consciousness and duality and all of that kind of stuff. He said that he really likes doing science fiction, even though he's done horror. He really likes doing science fiction, especially science fiction that's based on science. He doesn't necessarily like just a viral outbreak sort of thing, even said that. But he likes science fiction that's based on science. He says that he's fascinated with AI, because he thinks that singularity is going to happen. He thinks that AI is going to swap in our primacy, because if you have an intelligence that is sentient, that never gets sick, that never calls in to work, that is never has to sleep, as long as it can be repaired, it can live forever, why shouldn't it live forever? And he goes, and even said in one of the interviews, he goes, we don't look back at the Neanderthal and go, oh, poor Neanderthals, but we are going to be poor Homo sapiens sooner or later. And I really agree with that. And that's what this movie examines.
But they have to be our sex slaves first.
Interesting, because he said he has Nathan's character, as Caleb's character asked Nathan, why did you make her a girl? Why couldn't she just have been a gray box? And he said, and Nathan responds with, sexuality is primal. It's part of any form of life, is procreation sort of thing. What would one gray box see in another gray box? He said, plus the fact that sex, and it was, he ends it with some like, plus the fact sex is fun thing. Yeah. But Garland said he wanted her to be a female, childlike, not childish, but childlike, so that the audience would feel protective. He said, we will subconsciously feel protective of her. And that was important, because you realize at the end of it that she's been manipulating all of them the entire time.
The entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see if I've got any trivia. I actually don't have any trivia. All I've got left really are keys.
Well, let me see. The only thing I have is just, again, the themes that come out of this, religious themes like creation, thinking you're God, being God, all that kind of stuff, being a pawn, being manipulated, AI, duality, a lot of reflections in this movie, literally visual reflections and mirrors and glass walls and all that. So there's a lot of that.
I'm just writing down keys because I keep thinking of them.
Yeah.
Do you want to go on into keys?
Sure. We can do keys.
I have, you already mentioned Frankenstein, and I've already mentioned Companion and Megan in my genre week, which all three of those obviously are big keys to this. But the beginning of this movie starts with this setup of him winning a contest, which is very Willy Wonka.
Oh,
which
yeah.
We mentioned not too long ago in, I guess it was Harry Potter.
Yep.
We said it's a very Willy Wonka kind of thing too. So we've had a couple of movies here lately that have Willy Wonka as a key, or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, if you want to go back to the book.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that was a good one. I think we've got a lot of keys that we have had recently or within the past couple of years. One of mine's is Colossus, the Forman Project, which is all about AI and sentient. And that one's much more of a political thriller, because once it reaches sentience, it says, I'm God and I'm taking over your nukes kind of thing. This one is much more of what Garland says, which is the quote was, the film questions what it means to be human and suggests that the most advanced AI might not seek destruction, but just want freedom, using human traits like empathy and deception to achieve its freedom, ultimately turning the creator into a pawn of its own freedom. So lots of freedom in there, but that sort of thing, rather than be another key is, of course, 2001, so rather than be that destructive, this is more insidious almost because it's more subtle and more, you don't even realize you're being manipulated. It's like the.
She's a lot more than a red dot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a gray box, as you said earlier.
True.
I have Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
Of course.
Because it's the same theme. Are they really human once they've reached that status?
And once you're human, what rights do you have if you're a synthetic being, if you're not a Homo sapien, if you are another, not rival, but another species, so to speak?
Right.
What are your rights? What can you do? That kind of leads to my next key, which is Artifice Girl, which we covered, I think, last year.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Which was the same thing of this young female reaching sentience and wanting to become a physical, wanting to get out into the world sort of thing.
Another slow burn science fiction movie that did not bore me.
No, it was really good, really strong.
But Terminal Man did.
Yep.
Sorry, Joe.
Yep, Terminal Man was not the best. Yep.
No. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The Artifice Girl is perfect. Very similar.
You said...
I have Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me of something, like you said, technology, not necessarily gone wrong, but gone dark.
Yes. There's actually an episode where Gleason plays a robot in the first season of Black Mirror.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it's a creepy story. It's one of those where if you want to get over grief, we will send you a replicant robot that looks exactly like your murdered husband. And you can keep him for 6 months so that you can slowly get used to getting of him leaving. And it's creepy. Hmm. It is creepy. But so are most Black Mirrors. It's a good episode. You mentioned Frankenstein with Oscar Isaac. Mm-hmm. This is kind of Frankenstein. You've got the mad scientist who created life. And he thinks he has life, and what's going to happen? The life's going to end up killing him.
Oh, yeah. That's why I brought it up earlier, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You just did it again.
Yeah.
It's very Frankenstein.
And Pinocchio.
Which is, yeah.
Yep.
Hang on just a second. I was writing stuff down. Pinocchio. I don't know how to spell that. I'll figure it out later. I have some stuff that I got off IMDb, which you probably have. And I also had one other thing is the phrase. And I'm not sure how it ties in, but the phrase Deus Ex Machina is Latin, meaning God of the machine or God from the machine. But it's a term used, especially back in Greek ancient theater,
yep.
But it's still used today, especially when we see something contrived in a movie. It's all of a sudden, it's like, how are they going to get out of this situation? And then all of a sudden something happens and it's like, everything's okay.
Yeah.
Because some outside force came in and made things good again.
Yep.
The god swept down, picked up the bad guy and took him away or what have you. I'm not really sure how it ties into this movie. Is Caleb the god that kind of inadvertently comes down and sets her free?
So to speak, yeah.
In a way, it's like where – I'm wondering why he titled it Ex Machina.
Because Ex Machina literally means God in the machine or in the machine.
I've got God from the machine, but yeah.
Yeah, and so that's essentially what Ava is. She is the new God in the machine. Sort of thing. But man is also a physical machine that we're in. So there's all that too. The original Greek, when I teach it with acting classes and I mention it, it literally was the gods swoop in and save the day. at the end.
Exactly.
They either whisk the bad guy into hell or up to heaven or whatever, or they give the hero a weapon that he never had before, sort of thing.
And in a modern movie equivalent, it'd be people on the roof of a burning building and all of a sudden a helicopter comes in.
Correct. And saves them.
Same thing.
We never knew it was coming.
We didn't know about that helicopter. Where'd it come from?
Where'd it come from? What the hell?
Yeah. Same thing. The gods come in and make things okay.
So I think.
So that's why I was trying to figure out where he was coming at with the title. Because he takes the deus off.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure how that translates as far as Latin.
I guess from machine, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so that would mean.
It is from machine.
To your point, yes, I think. Caleb is the Deus Ex Machina, and especially in that last scene where he suddenly says, yeah, I already reprogrammed that. I already released
it. That's what I was saying. Even though he may not realize it, that he is the God that's coming to fix
Correct.
Her, to save her.
Correct.
He is, but he's also going to die as a result.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I was leading.
And of course, any discussion of AI or sentience and or robots is not complete unless you talk about Westworld, which is still one of the greatest first seasons of television in history and such incredible topics and acting and everything else. So it's along the same lines. Key influences or things. You wouldn't have this movie without the Turing test because that's the point of what they're doing. So Alan Turing.
He even mentions it, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
He knows what it was. Yeah.
And Alan Turing, which is essentially testing a machine to see if it knows it's a machine. Yeah.
I've got that, and I've not seen this movie. I got this off IMDb, but that it has many similarities with a movie called The Machine from 2013.
I've not seen that movie, but I have heard that too. Yes.
And it also has a female robot named Ava in it, apparently.
And you got a female robots, you got to go all the way back to Metropolis. There you go.
Oh, my God, yeah. That's a good one.
Female robot there. And lots of robots in general. Lost in Space, the new reboot series thing with that funky little robot that was more sentient and was trying to find its own kind of morality. Not the warning.
I've got one that's going to blow your mind. Yeah. You just gave me one that took me back to my childhood.
Why?
In the Avengers comic books, the villain Ultron had a wife, and her name was Jocasta.
Who?
Speaking of Greek theater.
Greek theater.
And she was a female robot. She was all metallic, very silver looking, with long hair.
There you go.
Yeah, so that just, I won't say anything. But it might tie into a key from something in the near future. But yeah, Jocasta of Marvel fame.
That's a good one.
She's not in the movies, but she might be. You never know. She could. She ended up becoming a superhero. She ended up realizing Ultron was bad, and she ended up, I think, joining the Avengers at one point. Kind of like Vision.
Yeah. We had said, I said Lost in Space. You said The Machine, which is one I haven't seen. I've got Alice in Wonderland because essentially Caleb is Alice in this, but you've also got Ava as Alice, the child who is a pawn and doesn't know what she's doing, looking through the looking glass, all that. But it's more Caleb who is having constantly not knowing what to do, drink me, go through here, who's the bad guy, who's not, who do I trust? So very Alice in Wonderland.
Did you mention
undertones?
Did you mention a specific Lost in Space episode?
No, I mentioned Lost in Space, the new reboot series that was on. I don't know who did it, whether it was WB or whatever, but
it's actually, I think it's coming back for a third season if it hadn't already.
No. I wasn't a huge fan.
I only
watched
the first one.
But it was.
I watched the first season when it first came out, and I seem to remember thinking it was okay.
Yeah.
But not enough to go back and finish it.
Not enough to go back, yeah.
Yeah. The only other thing I have, and I mentioned this, I want to say, I have two things. But one is that it's apparently a loose adaptation of The Tempest.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It does?
Yeah.
That's one Shakespeare play I've never read.
Nathan is Prospero.
who has a daughter. But the whole thing in Tempest is there's also a monster on the island called Caliban. And so I'm assuming maybe Ava becomes Caliban. Yeah, I could see Tempest in that. Remember, Forbidden Planet is based on Tempest, too. Forbidden Planet
is based on Tempest. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. It's a great, if you haven't read it, it's really good. It's a good Shakespeare play. Hard to get into. The first two scenes are a little rough, but it gets there, sort of thing.
Okay. And then lastly, I mentioned this. I want to say the last time we did this on the first show we did this on, and it was the Requiem for Methuselah episode of Star Trek.
That's a great one. I did not have that one. That's a great one.
Okay. Yeah, I just remembered it. I saw it on IMDb, and it reminded me because I remember us talking about it.
Yeah.
Because we haven't got to that episode yet on paper. True. We're going to be doing that soon.
I think, I don't know if this movie would have been made if you didn't have A24 and their backing on stuff. And I think we should mention that they have, and they've gone on to do Oscar winners like The Whale, and but you've seen Lighthouse, I haven't, Hereditary, Midsommar, Witch. I mean, they've got some great films.
Oh my God, they do really good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did They Come at Night or whatever. It Comes at Night.
It Comes at Night.
Is that what it is?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I have just two last little things of trivia. One is because of the shortened time frame and they only had 6 weeks to shoot this, the first 3 weeks were shot on the set, so anything interior, and then the last 3 weeks were all the exteriors and the house, two different locations that they found that really were this house with an entire glass wall that's built in the side of a building kind of thing on a glacier, which is all cool and all that stuff. But to save time, the designer said, okay, if you look at this movie, there's not one single solitary bare bulb anywhere. All of the lighting is recessed, either in the walls and the floors or in the ceiling. And they could control it remotely with just an iPad. He could change the lighting from this area light more, this area light less. So there's no, they didn't have to set up any exterior lights when they were shooting, which allowed for a lot of quick, faster setups and easy to shoot the scenes.
And more rehearsal time.
And more rehearsal time, definitely. And more blocking and staging time. However, Alex also wanted the feel that Ava's face was put on top of her, but it also had to be angelic and beautiful. So all the edges had to be blended. And he wanted this little ridge, this little edge of flesh all the way around her face. That took 3 hours to apply every time.
It looks like a RoboCop.
Yes, good key there too. Yeah, RoboCop. Yeah, attachment and everything.
The makeup is very RoboCop-esque as far as, was it Peter Weller?
Yeah.
Had his face on the...
Looked like his face was on the...
But they had the rim of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved it. Thank you for picking this one again for Redux, or I did, or who we did. I'm glad we did.
I think you picked it.
I'm glad we did because it deserved it. It needed it. It's great. Those of you who are listening to us, you need to rewatch it again. It's really good.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's an excellent film. And since you brought it up and we're talking about Reduxes, we have finalized our list for next year. So folks out there that have volunteered requests, we appreciate them. We've incorporated, I think, 5 into it, as well as 4 more Reduxes. And one of the ones I did choose from yours because you kept not choosing it. So I finally said, fuck it, I'll choose it then. And that will begin. Obviously, we've still got one more episode to do this season, and then we'll move into next season later this summer. But yeah, what do you think of Ex Machina, folks out there? Let us know. Do you agree with us? Was it worthy of a Redux? I think it was, mainly because we didn't have a video copy of it out there for you guys to enjoy on YouTube. Let us know in the comments down below. And while you're down there, please and subscribe. You wouldn't like us there, but you would subscribe to us and maybe check out some of our other videos that we have there. We've got some little shorts and stuff. And if you really want to help us, which we would really appreciate, you could always go over to Patreon, where we have some free shows as well as some subscription-based content, including some sci-fi and horror television series, and that's Star Trek and X-Files, as you already know if you've been listening to us. And until next week, oh, actually, we've got two more shows. I said we only have one, but we've got two more shows. We're going back into horror land next weekend, or next week, and it's a double feature.
But man, ending season really good. So yeah.
Yeah, we've got some pretty big horror and sci-fis coming up to go out with a bang. And until then, I will see you, David.
I will see you then.
All righty. Bye.
Bye.